And with a look at the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, it's Evelyn Lees. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Well, if people want to head out there, there's going to be one more day of wonderful powder in the backcountry. Pretty much on all elevations and aspects, we've had no snow and only a little wind up high. So nothing's really been destroying that powder. The avalanche danger does remain moderate. We've got two main concerns for today. One is those sugary, weak, persistent weak layers that are in various depths in the snowpack. And the most likely place you'd be able to trigger a slab avalanche on one of those would be on a steep mid or upper elevation slope facing northwest through easterly. So that's only a small part of the terrain. There's so many other places to go and get that good powder. The other issue is we're watching out for wind loading and wind slabs. The winds did kick up a little bit last night at the high elevations. They're quite calm this morning, but later this afternoon and then tomorrow, the winds are going to pick up. So if you're out in the afternoon and where you are, the winds are starting to increase and blow and drift some snow, avoid any of those fresh new wind drifts. And just a heads up, tomorrow will be a completely different day because we're going to have very strong southwesterly winds ahead of the next storm, which should bring us some more snow on Thursday.
Okay, Evelyn, hey, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:10. It's 8:12 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow, starting at about 2 o'clock. They'll be meeting at the Summit County Courthouse in Colville. On the phone with me, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council getting an update from the North Summit Recreation District. It looks like the county bought some property from the North Summit School District, Colville donating some land for a park, and then the county gives the district about $35,000 a year for some youth programs. Now talk about cutting back on that. Is that what's happening?
Well, one of the ideas that came out of the budget process this past year was, and especially as we were talking about property taxes, is that we've been providing $35,000 to the Snyderville Basin Recreation District, the South Summit School District, who provides some youth recreation, and then the North Summit Recreation District. They've each received money, an equal amount, over the past several years in order to run these programs. The question is, you know, as we continue to get pressure from different groups to expand those recreation opportunities, what is the source of that funding over time?
So again, are we talking about cutting that back?
Well, we've already cut it back somewhat in the 2018 budget. We did not provide any funding for youth recreation out of the county's budget to the Snyderville Basin Recreation District, and we're beginning conversations with the South Summit School District and the North Summit Special Recreation District about the future of that funding in regards to those recreation programs and what those communities desire in the future. You know, as the council makes their rounds and as we prepare the budget each year, we hear from constituents that want to have more opportunities in the South Summit and the North Summit area. And at some point, that means that more dollars needs to be dedicated to those programs over time. And so a plan for the future is probably necessary at some point.
Right. So something similar to what we see here in Snyderville Basin, where taxpayers have agreed to a tax levy on their portion of the property tax.
Yeah, I mean, if those services and the communities that want them desire to grow in the future, it probably is not appropriate that growth happen out of the county's general fund. It probably should be thought about in a different way. It could be a special district with a mill levy associated with it. There's probably other ways as well.
I'm moving on, a legislative update from Councilmember Kim Carson and Jana Young, our intergovernmental administrator. So do we know of what proposed bills will affect Summit County?
Well, there are several that we're watching. You know, sales tax and how that's distributed throughout the state, whether it's by point of sale or by population, is always an interesting thing to watch. Of course, population distribution does not necessarily favor Summit County. We prefer point of sale, and we'll see where the legislature goes with that. They're also looking at some proposals to change how TRT or transient room tax and its flexibility on where it can be spent. There's some smaller counties that are looking for more flexibility around that. So those are two of the taxing issues that are out there. And then there's several that some of our other elected officials and their statewide groups are looking at as well.
So in terms of the sales tax distribution, who's rooting for the population? I mean, places like big urban areas?
Yeah, population. It's usually urban areas or smaller counties that are wanting to just see a little bit more just distribution away from point of sale. And so it's just a redistribution that we keep our eye on.
Okay. There's also a bill allowing the county leadership to remove someone for mental incompetence, I guess, in effect, a Gary Ott bill.
Yeah, certainly the experience that Salt Lake County had over the last 2 years probably is driving some of this thought process on legislation. I'm not sure where that one's going to go yet. It's always a balance between the way I've read some of the literature is that the balance between the privacy and the medical privacy of elected officials and what the body needs to do in order to be responsible in those elected offices.
All right. Also, a proposal relating to the Senate Bill 54 controversy. Some concern that if a lot of candidates get on the ballot by the signature gathering process, the winner in a primary could get less than 51% of the vote. So a proposal that voters apparently could vote by ranking their choices on the ballot. Any concern with this and the burden it could cause for our county clerk?
Yeah, our certainly a concern of mine. The more complicated it becomes to negotiate or adjudicate that voting process, of course, the cost goes up. So there's the fiscal note associated with that would be passed on to counties. But the complexity of the voter too is a big concern of the county, our county clerk, and I believe the clerk's association. The more difficult we make it for people to understand that ballot, the more it's difficult to vote. And so that's what I've heard voice from Kent Jones.
Pat Putt will be giving, our community development director, will be giving a presentation on something you're calling a tourism, recreation, arts enterprise corridor. What's this about?
Well, we've had the rail trail between Park City and the Echo Reservoir, which is now becoming a state park. We've had that out there for the last 20 to gets widely used, but we really haven't developed any cohesive strategy around how that could be used to enhance tourism, economic development. It could spark thought processes around ag preservation and open space acquisition in the area, as well as that trail passes through areas like Wanship, Hoytsville, Colville. How that could all be seen as a corridor that has a solid plan around it for how it could be developed in the future. Pat Putt has been talking about this idea. His department has been talking about this idea. One of the things that seems to be close to our radar right now is the area of land east of the 40 corridor we have an underpass under the highway that connects to Round Valley. What are the possibilities for trail network and open space preservation in that corridor in the short to medium term in a plan in order to enhance that area?
There'll also be a discussion with regard to Mountain Regional annexing the community water system, which is owned by TCFC. Is this the water system at the canyons or part of the canyons?
It is the water system at the canyons, and it has, as you read through the staff report, it has some deficiencies that are going to cost quite a bit of money to correct over the next few years. And, you know, annexing into one of the larger water districts allows them to provide some financing help around that. So that those properties that would be affected by that water system being annexed in could work with a larger system that has more expertise in providing those services.
So how many connections do we have in the system?
You know, I didn't read how many connections we've got. I do know that the deficiency in infrastructure at this point, looks like at about a $1.5 million, a little bit over $1.5 million. And then some associated planning and fees and other engineering work would bring a total bill of about $2.14 million that would have to be financed through those connections over time with higher rates to water, of course.
So they would be paying for it, not everybody in Mountain Regional.
That is correct. Mountain Regional would apply for some low interest loans from the State Water Board, as they do with other water systems or other parts of their water system. That would help out this project, and then the water users in the current community water system would be the ones that would pay off those bonds.
All right. A rezone for Peter Caroon's Rasmussen Place project from rural residential to community commercial. Again, this is nearly 23 acres along Rasmussen Road. Residential with 62 market units, 40 affordable units. For the council to approve this, does the rezone have to pass the provision 2.3 test? That is, there is a compelling countervailing need to create a new entitlement?
Well, yes, that's the case. However, I just heard last night, as I was preparing for the interview this morning, that this item has been pulled from the agenda for tomorrow. I don't have any details on that, but that's what I know as of last night.
All right. What we do know is that the Snyderville Planning Commission did approve that rezone. They were worried that community commercial isn't the right zone. It just opens up too many uses. I mean, so should we start thinking about another zone?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, that's one of the items on the Planning Commission and the Council's list of things to work on in 2018. And I believe that the Planning Department will be teeing that up with the Planning Commission soon.
All right. Let's see. The new agreement with the Park City Chamber and Visitors Bureau for the transient room tax. According to the staff packet, this amends the contract that was set back in 2011. Instead of the current 10%, 90% split, 90% going to the chamber, it would change 30 for the county and 70 for the Chamber Bureau to transition over 3 years. For instance, this summer, the split would be 17.83%. So how much of a cut is this for the chamber in terms of dollars?
So it all depends on the growth of PRT. So, I mean, one of the things that kind of kicked off this conversation from the council's perspective, they kind of looked at two things. In 2012, the revenues from transient room tax was about $5.6 million. And, of course, under that 90-10 relationship, that was the split. Just in this last week, an unaudited number from 2017 were just over $10 million in collections. So it kind of sparked the conversation about, you know, what is the proper level of tourism marketing that we encourage in the community, balanced with, you know, what could we do for a longer term perspective instead of just annual marketing? Could we look at hard assets that could be purchased, could be built? As examples in order to encourage tourism and have things that will last longer. that was kind of the impetus around all of this. And then in answering your direct question about the 70-30 split, we believe that with the growth of TRT, by the time we get to that 2020 timeframe, the chamber will not be looking at a cut per se at all. They'll, through the growth of that TRT, they will actually still be collecting more.
All right. So in addition, the Chamber Bureau is going to give $100,000 a year for alternative transportation. This is in addition to the final split?
Yeah, so it's you know, the Chamber has always been very good about helping with some community issues that are connected to tourism. One of the areas that they were interested in helping with was alternative transportation. They were very intrigued by the possibilities of our electric bike share program, and would like to help with some of the marketing around that. So that's where that $100,000 within the agreement would be directed. As well, they would like to help with some of the marketing around the Summit County Fair. So they will be dedicating $25,000 from their allocation of TRT towards that as well.
Okay, so that's now and forever then, huh? Or until the contract's renegotiated?
It is part of the 10-year agreement, and it will be part of that 10-year agreement until the 10 years runs out and we renegotiate it, or one of the parties decides that they want to renegotiate again.
So was the county looking for a bigger cut but settled with these $125,000 a year payments in lieu of or something?
It was more about dollars that the chamber already dedicates towards other tourism activities within the community. They just wanted to have a little bit more say in that. And they were actually items that the chamber brought up as items that they would like to participate in.
All right. I'll be talking with, I don't know if it's you or Jana and Bill Malone about it next week. Is the council ready to approve this, though?
I believe they are.
All right. Also related to the legislative update, as you mentioned, as we know, TRT money has to be spent on tourism-related purposes. Some talk of a bill that would give the TRT more flexibility so money could be spent on more infrastructure. So your take on that, is that good news?
Well, it kind of depends on where you are in the state. We believe that, generally more flexibility with taxes is better. But with this specific tax, we are between some of the larger counties and the smaller counties in our beliefs around this. We haven't certainly enjoyed the way that it works now, but we can certainly understand how some of the smaller counties would like a little bit more flexibility on you being able to use some of this money towards infrastructure that is associated with tourism instead of having to be directly tied to an asset tied to tourism. It's a nuance, but it would help. It would probably enhance tourism in those parts of the state.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention, Tom?
Just three things. We've got some boards that we're recruiting for right now. We've got actually four. On January 24th, we'll close the recruitment for the weed board. On January 31st, we've got two openings on the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission that we are recruiting for. We're closing on January 31st. The Eastern Summit County Planning Commission, also two openings that we're recruiting for, closing on February 1st. And then the Summit County Health Board has one opening that we're recruiting for, and that will close on February 7th.
All right. Tom, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher again. The Summit County Council meeting tomorrow, Wednesday the 24th, starting at about 2 o'clock at the County Courthouse in Colville. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.
Support for KPCW comes from the Crandall family, owners of the New Park Amphitheater, site of the New Park Concert Series, and numerous other community events.
31. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow night once again to discuss the reduced density Treasure Hill project. In the studio with an update, I have Community Development Director Ann Laurent and Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So last I looked, I didn't see the agenda. So you're meeting what time tomorrow?
Tomorrow night it starts at 5:30. Right now, the staff report, which folks have been working on all night to produce, is now posted to the Treasurer website. It's posted to the City Council website. It'll be up on the Planning Commission website by about now this morning, as soon as our folks can deal with some technical difficulties.
Okay. So the 30-plus page report, I mean, what does the public need to know about it?
The public needs to know that it's data dense, and there's a lot of information going on in there. You'll see the length of the road, the quantities of the excavation of the road. You'll see the retaining walls of the road. You'll see the road draped into Google Earth, so you have an idea of what that's all about. You'll have an idea of the location of the hotel. We're still working on the massing of the hotel, and that may be part of the presentation to the City Council tonight. You'll also see the responses to all the Planning Commissioner questions from the last meeting, also responses to the public's questions at the last meeting. So as I said, it's very data-rich. Ann's been working tirelessly to get this thing out, and I think that's important to the community to message that it's not just the planning director and the planning team working on this now. You have the full attention of the community development director.
Well, Ann, segueing to this, then, since staff's been so focused on Treasurer, is other city planning business now backed up?
No, we have put a time frame on this, and we are, you know, 1 week more of intense conversations, and we are working towards a decision in January. And the other project that I was specifically working on is the arts and culture, and we did not anticipate starting that until the Sundance was over anyway.
So are we talking January 7th for a final decision now?
No, we're actually, right now, we're talking about the 30th and the 31st for the Planning Commission. The City Council still needs to give us their final date.
Okay, so the 31st is the next time after.
I believe it's going to be the 30th. We have some quorum issues on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Yeah, Planning Commission Chair Strawn is not in town. So Vice Chair Band has agreed to cancel one of her events and be available for the 30th if we have to make this decision. And it'll depend exactly on what the City Council does to us tonight and what we do to ourselves tomorrow night in the Planning Commission hearing. But we're moving forward. All the other things are going forward. We have a potential annexation at Mountain Top Subdivision, which is in the county on Quarry Mountain. That's moving forward. We have some additional information on some other projects that are moving forward. So all eight of the planners are doing this in order to keep the folks on Treasurer focused. All the other ones are carrying double duty.
So yesterday, Assistant Park City Manager Matt Dias told me he feels confident that we got it right this time around in terms of mitigation, the road. Do you agree with that?
Go ahead, Ann.
I'll take a stab at that. I believe we're talking about all the right issues, and the road we knew was one, and we know we have a road that works, and we can describe it and explain to the community and the planning commissioners what that road is. The next one is the massing, and all the related issues around those heights and excavation amounts. We are working really hard and made great progress to actually talk about a project that's in gross square footage, which I think was important to the community because it's a cap, not a this plus, plus, plus. And so I think we've got all the right parameters. We all wish we had more time. And what we will do with items that are still outstanding is we'll talk about, how do we address those as we move forward.
So this, even though we approve a development agreement and a settlement agreement, does this mean that the project goes forward as proposed now, or could lots of changes be made between now and...
Think of it this way. It's the same way we went through Park City Heights, the same way we went through the film studio, same way we did the hospital, in that we've established the box around what development can be, and then there's going to be an administrative process that's open to the public on changes inside those controls that Ann has mentioned for height, mass, density, all those other issues. So we expect that there will be design review. We expect that we'll be reviewing it for architectural. We expect that we're going to be reviewing every piece of this for the parameters that are inside the MPD master plan development, just the same way as we do any other major project in the town. Whether it's Empire Pass or Deer Valley or Park City Mountain Resort, they always return for administrative processes.
All right. So it looks like the road we're talking about, or the one that we've come to agreement on, is the one that had the most turns and cuts. Is that true?
That is pretty close to true. The 10% road that comes down the south-facing slope of Creole probably had a couple more switchbacks in it than where Ann and her design team have gotten to now. So it's somewhere between what we were at 14% and where we were on the 10% road.
And I would just add to that, what we really did was optimize the road. It was really about meeting the fire code requirements of 10% or less. We do, they did allow us to have a couple segments that were up to 12% for no more than 250 feet. We met that requirement, and we also optimized the cut and the fill. Most of the road will be in cut, but we are minimized all the retaining walls to less than 40 feet and also looked at where those are, and we think they're in pretty reasonable areas that aren't overly visible. And then I do want to, and I think if you look at the three-dimensional, you can see how the road really does follow the contour of the land. So that's really what was driving it, as well as fitting it within a certain area. As far as the future processes, I think it's important to look at this project as two parts. It's a hotel and it's a subdivision. Those will have different, as we move the discussions forward, there'll be discussions around what's framing the hotel and what future processes may or may not be. And then there's going to be subdivision, treat it like any other subdivision. We've done this all over, as long as we understand certain concerns and parameters around it. And that's really how we're doing it. There's also this third component. There was a lot of public comment around MidStation, and we'll be presenting a lot more information about that tonight, because that was a good chunk of our public comment and concerns that we've been receiving.
All right. Just before we get to the MidStation stuff, let's talk a little bit about the massing and the height and the excavation. What do we know about that? And that's really would be for the hotel as opposed to the homes, or?
So the homes, we right now would be compliant with what the underlying zoning, which it is intended to be a state at this point. It requires a rezoning of some portion of the land, which will be, again, a subsequent process. So it'll meet the zone requirements of that. The hotel in and of itself, we don't have a lot of the information. We're trying to keep it as low and stepped as we can. We have an initial graphic in the plan, but to show contrast of the scale of the overall hotel against the 17-tune refinement that was being discussed, but it's not finished yet, and I believe there's more information needed on the massing before we can tell you what it is in terms of volumetrics.
And in terms of the excavation, we're not going down the 4 to 5 stories that we needed to do on 17.2?
No, we're not. Right now we're anticipating a couple of stories perhaps for the underground garage in order to keep the height down on the hotel. And the team is working very hard to come in somewhere around a third of the million cubic yards of excavation in 17.2. Those numbers have yet to be finalized. There's some detailed information in the staff report about that. But I think right now it revolves around how the hotel fits into the hillside, because the hillside is quite steep. This is a piece of ground that we would not ordinarily consider for development, and so the architecture needs to be very, very careful how this goes in.
Have we decided what gets built first, the hotel or the homes?
We have not. What we have decided is that the road needs to be completed before anything else happens. If there's a spur off the road, for example, or if there's a cul-de-sac, that may not necessarily need to be done. But we want to be able to use the road for construction staging. We want to be able to use the road for snow storage. We want to be able to use the road for a number of other things having to do with the development. Right now, our mitigation strategy is that the utilities need to be completed in the first year, maybe the first 2 years, depending on how the construction sequencing works, and the road needs to be completed before anything else happens.
Let's talk a little bit about the mid-use station uses. There's up to 10,000 square feet of support commercial. Like what?
Okay, so I want to clarify that. What? And actually, Park City 2, the landowner, has actually reduced that number to 7,500 square feet. And that is a gross square foot number. The net number is 5,000 square feet. And right now, what's being proposed is limiting it to resort accessory uses. And there's a definition in our land management code that we're referring to. Those are the kind of uses we see at the resorts to support the skiers, and we are proposing that it is on the other side, meaning the behind the private gate for the road. That's part of the proposal that'll be talked about, so that it isn't easy access for any vehicle visitors, so it's not drawing traffic into the Lowell Empire neighborhood. And we're also talking about minimal parking just for deliveries and a few employees.
So we're talking about ski rentals, hats and goggles, that kind of stuff, plus maybe mountain bikes?
Lockers, first aid, all those kind of things. But we are talking light concessions as well to support.
Yeah, because that was certainly what you had heard from Main Street merchants, that they didn't want to see uses that would compete with what we have on Main Street, but it sounds like there needs to be some overlap.
Well, that's what the landowner's requesting, and we think it's reasonable within the resort accessory definition. The other option that the has been reserved by Park City too is should they decide to use some of their UE commercial at this location rather than up at the hotel, they are asking for that just because it's an unknown at this point. But keep in mind that none of this is going to happen unless something happens and changes with the lift, and so...
Right. We would need a mid-station loading and unloading situation.
Correct.
Yeah. And then who's that would be maybe a negotiation with Park City Mountain Resort then, huh? Because that's their chairlift.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of conversations that the landowner, Park City 2, needs to have with the resort. The mitigation strategies we're moving forward are consistent with the previous master plan, which says that little or no material can be transported over public roads, the fill and excavation. So that needs to be negotiated with the resort. There is an existing agreement between the Sweeney Properties Master Plan and the resort on the operation of the lift. That probably will be need to be modified, and we need to understand what that is. And then the mid station, I think, is an operational question for the resort and also the community. So that'll come forward in some sort of administrative review as well, and may actually end up to be a conditional use permit or a modification of the existing permit on that site.
Well, in response to some of the public comment, I mean, what's included in the project to help Main Street merchants? I mean, what I think I read in the staff report is that's not possible. And I'm guessing that was the whole reason we used to hear from the Sweeney brothers, is that it was to help their lower Main Street development.
Well, you know, I think the scale of the project has been significantly reduced. So the 100 to 120 room hotel on the Ridge is delivering several hundred people in a nightly rental situation to Main Street. And as this moves forward, I think you're going to see that several hundred people not have to drive to Main Street, which means no parking impacts, which puts more people in the restaurants and the shops. Whether that's the same as a million square feet of residential and commercial from the previous project, it's not. On the other hand, this very well could be some very, very less expensive traffic mitigation. The difference between the version 17.2 and this hotel, you know, if we had to build another parking garage for some reason, or if we had to build additional roads, or we had to add additional buses or whatever we did for the version 17.2, this might be a less expensive option. So I think we're delivering heads on beds. While there may not be that many of them, I also think we're delivering a project that reduces traffic on Main Street.
And we're keeping open the option of the mobility to Main Street without using a car. I mean, that's going to be a theme that's supported by Park City 2 as well as the city. But the density of this initial project is a hotel and a subdivision. We're just keeping the options open and trying to project into the future how it can connect.
There's also, I believe, 5,000 square feet of meeting space, and I think what I read, some 833 people, that would be like a stand-up cocktail party. How do all those people get up there?
That's one of the things we're working through, Leslie. They do have the right to apply for meeting space under the land management code, and they've done that. Whether we put a restriction on it that a certain portion of those people need to be staying at the hotel versus everybody taking the shuttle up there is something we're looking at. In the background, we're also reviewing how special events are managed. For example, if somebody wanted to do a wedding in the summertime at this location, because it is fairly spectacular over Main Street, we need to look at that. We're not interested in driving any more traffic on the Lowell and Empire. We're not interested in dragging a whole bunch of traffic through the gate. If folks are staying at the hotel and they want to have an event, great, let's go. If you want to come in from Cleveland and not stay at the hotel, probably not.
Would the roads allow for buses?
Yes, the road geometry will allow for a full-size bus. The road will allow for a full-size fire apparatus.
Okay, and real quick, affordable housing on-site or off-site? Have we decided?
Right now, it is on-site, but the affordable the housing mitigation plan would have to be approved down the road by the Park City Housing Authority. And so that, you know, we don't know what will actually come back when a project is proposed. But right now, on-site, it's all in the calculations. That's what's being considered.
And so a separate building or in the hotel or where?
Preferably with the hotel. There are some phasing issues that if the single family homes get built first, we wouldn't want those to be built without the affordable housing obligations. So if the housing goes first, we're going to have to figure something else out.
Okay. And Bruce, need to leave it there. Again, the Park City Planning Commission meeting 5:30 tomorrow, City Council Chambers. Thanks.
Thank you.
You hear her on KPCW as NPR's arts correspondent. She reports on stories about films, television, music, the performing arts. She's in Park City as part of the team coverage of Sundance, and she's also just finished doing a live feed to National Public Radio on the Oscar nominations that were announced this month. Mandalit Del Barco joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you've been up early.
Yes.
I mean, this is somebody coming from California. What, just to watch the live stream? Is that...
Yeah, you guys invited us over here. Thank you so much to watch the live stream of the nominations. They go on in L.A., in Beverly Hills, actually, at like 5 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, their time. So it's an annual thing. Very interesting.
Okay,
this year.
I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that first, but just in terms of you being here mm-hmm. in Sundance, you and your producer, Nina Gregory, have been
my editor, yeah.
Coming for what?
A couple years. I think this is our fourth year.
Yeah. And does she assist other reporters, or is she kind of your person?
Well, she's the editor for an arts editor. So we have a couple of other people from the shows, Weekend, All Things Considered, and All Things Considered during the weekdays, too. And David Green, the host of Morning Edition, he was out here just on vacation, but he happened to be here for Sundance as well. So, Nina, yeah, she helps to coordinate what we're doing on the air on our network. All the time. So we're like a little team here. We've been doing a lot of interviews, going to a lot of movies, panels, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, what is it that your executive producers then want from you while you're here in town?
Well, you know, it's a great way to see what's going to be coming up in the theaters this coming year, see what's and to talk to some of the directors and filmmakers, actors. I had a really cool interview this week with Armando Iannucci. He's the filmmaker for a film called The Death of Stalin. He's a satirist from the UK, and he's Scottish, actually. But he was amazing. So we had a sit-down interview with him about his work, and that story is going to come out later, you know, when the film is out. But it was a chance to talk to him here, and we've done that every year. We've been able to, you know, sit down and talk to filmmakers.
Yeah, so it's kind of, you don't really have an agenda other than really to kind of find an interesting story that you think is going to hold for.
Yeah, and you know, when we first got here, I did a preview of what to see at Sundance. You know, what people were kind of talking about right away, and I was able to go to the press conference the first day with Robert Redford. Was talking, and Carrie Putnam, the head of Sundance Institute, and John Cooper, who's the head of Sundance Film Festival, and that was really interesting because they were talking about how this is kind of a post Harvey Weinstein kind of moment now,
right,
here at the festival.
And basically, I mean, they've really washed their hands of that, and just it's, and as I think Cooper said, just it's time to move on, folks.
Right, move on. Let's move on. And so I was also here for the Respect Rally, the women's rally this past weekend. And that was really great to see Gloria Allred, the civil rights attorney, who I usually see at press conferences in Los Angeles. She represents a lot of the women who have accused Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby and other people of her sexual misconduct and rape, she was here at the rally with Jane Fonda, who's also, both of them are subjects of documentaries. As well as, you know, it was also cool to see Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice. She is also the subject of a documentary that's playing here at Sundance. And she was interviewed on stage by NPR's Nina Totenberg. So that was a really fun thing to see, to watch them on stage talking about her life and her work.
Yeah, and the line out the door, that was not an easy one to get into.
Yeah.
You know, I joked earlier this week that I'll get one of the producers from, you know, Jane Fonda and Five Acts. We're talking actually with the directors of Seeing All Red, but I'm guessing that you get Jane Fonda and Gloria, or, I mean, does NPR have that much pull?
You know, one of our people who is here on the ground, they're talking to, I think, maybe the same team, and they got to speak to, I think Gloria Allred was interviewed by one of our shows, and so that's very cool. I mean, like I said, I see them in Los Angeles, but it's great to see them in a different location. And also at that rally, it was very... It was really rousing. We were here last year, too, for the other women's march and rally just up the street here. And so a lot of the same people were here. Of course, there were rallies all over the country. So we got to represent the Snowbound rally. Yeah.
So earlier this morning, you did a live report following the nominations with on Morning Edition. What did you have? All of about 3-5 minutes?
Three and a half minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, how did you pull it? I mean, how scripted is that, I guess, in terms of, because
you don't know ahead of time. Usually we just look for something that's kind of historic or, you know, surprising. This year, we found out that Rachel Morrison, she's the cinematographer, the director of photography for Mudbound, and she became the first woman ever to be nominated in that category. And Mudbound, of course, was a film that was shown here at Sundance last year. Mary J. Blige, who's in it, she got a supporting actress nomination from that. And there were other films that had played at Sundance last year that got nominations. Get Out, you know, the horror film that was like a secret midnight movie last year, that was nominated for several nominations. And Jordan Peele also as best director. And The Big Sick, I know, was here last year. I was able to interview Kamal Nanjiani on stage. That was really fun. And to see, you know, here a year later, his film is nominated for, I think, for original screenplay. Also, Call Me By Your Name was shown here last year. That got a nomination. So, and several of the documentaries, because I know Sundance is really known for its documentaries. Icarus, Strong Island, and Last Man in Aleppo were the three documentaries that I know that were at Sundance last year, too, and they got nominations. So it was fun to see, you know, coming back here a year later, and, wow, those films that we saw here, you know, they could win.
Yeah, right. I heard some oohing and aahing from the green room as I was kind of in my cubicle there as you guys were watching the nomination. So any big surprises there? I mean, or sort of?
Well, this like kind of historic kind of markers were interesting. The Shape of Water got 13 nominations, including for Best Director, Best Picture, Best Actress, and Best Actor. Those are the big ones. So that they, you know, that was, yeah, they're likely to get at least one of those. Probably more than one. I mean, it could be, you know, Guillermo del Toro. He directed that film. So he's up for Best Director as well. So, the other films that were nominated are kind of expected. Three Billboards from Ebbing, Missouri. You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. Nine, in fact, for Best Picture. We'll see. Like maybe next year, one of these films that we're seeing at Sundance this year could get nominated. You never know.
Yeah, real quick, anything that you've particularly liked that you've watched while here?
You know, I'm from Oakland, California, so there are two films from Oakland that I was so proud to see represented, Blindspotting, and that premiered the first night, or Friday night, and another film by Boots Riley called Sorry to Bother You, and that's gotten a lot of buzz, too. So it was really fun to see, you know, my hometown up there. Yardi, Idris Elba's film about this Jamaican. It was set in Jamaica and the UK. That was another one to see, fun to see. I've heard good things about the Mr. Rogers documentary, which I missed, but I'm going to watch it. You know, Gloria Allred's film, Seeing Allred. You know, there's a lot. Colette, which was, I think, the first film that got sold here. Bought or whatever you want to call it.
Right. $5 million, which
Yeah. So, you know, Sundance always has been kind of a forecaster for, at least for the documentary category at the Oscars, and I'm sure in a lot of other ones too. I might see them coming up next year. Hopefully we'll be back next year to report on the Sundance and the Oscars nominations.
Great. Well, hope to see you again, Mandalit. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Again, NPR reporter Mandalit DelBarco.